Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here, inviting you to check out WallStreetWindow.com. It's a financial blog written by former hedge fund manager Mike Swanson, who's investing in commodities, mining stocks, and European markets. Wall Street Window is unique in that Mike shows people what he's really investing in and updates you when he buys or sells in his main account. Mike thinks his positions are going to go up because of all the money the Federal Reserve is printing to finance the deficit. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. And Mike's got a great new book coming out, so also keep your eye on writerMichaelSwanson.com for more details. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton, and our next guest is Cora Currier from ProPublica.org. She's a fellow there at ProPublica, previously on the editorial staff of the New Yorker magazine, and covered the youth vote for the nation back in 2008. That's interesting. Welcome to the show. How are you doing, Cora?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's good to have you back. It's been a while since we spoke, but you've got such a great piece of work here at ProPublica.org. I wish everyone to go and look at it. It's called Everything We Know So Far About Drone Strikes, and I'm pretty sure that's not an overstatement. You've got it all. Links light up this post. Like a Justin Raimondo column. I guess, like you do in the piece, I'll ask you to go ahead and take us through sort of chronologically here about how the drone war got started and how we got to where we are now. And where are we now?
Great. Well, you know, when we're talking about the drone war, it's important to distinguish that we're talking about, you know, the covert war that's happening outside of Afghanistan. So we're talking about strikes in Yemen, in Somalia, and in Pakistan. And this has been going on for some time. You know, the first reported drone strike outside Afghanistan against al-Qaeda happened in Yemen in 2002. There were sort of a smattering throughout Bush's presidency. And then they really ramped up in 2008 under Bush and the Obama administration.
And I guess we're talking about strikes outside of Afghanistan, because they really use them in Afghan and Iraq wars. But we're talking
the
secret wars.
We're talking
wars.
About them outside of it. Yeah,
we're talking
about
wars.
The wars outside of what the military calls the hot battlefields. So those have been concentrated. The main reported strikes have been in Yemen, Somalia, and Pakistan. Somalia more recently. So those, as I said, the expansion really began in 2008 in President Bush's last year, and it was taken up and greatly expanded under President Obama. They peaked, the number of strikes, at least in Pakistan, peaked around as much as 120 in 2010. And then as numbers have sort of ebbed and flowed lately, last year Yemen had the most strikes. And when we talk about the war against the targeted killing program or the sort of broader war against terror outside of Afghanistan, we're generally talking about drone strikes. It's not exclusively drone strikes. There have been instances reported of, traditional airstrikes or other missions. Obviously, the raid against bin Laden would be an example. That was not a drone strike. But by one estimate, 95% of targeted killings carried out have been via drone strikes. So it is definitely a tool of choice.
It's really interesting, isn't it, about really just the fact that it's a remote control plane changes so much. Because, for example, when Seymour Hersh said at a speech one day, well, the lawyers wouldn't let me put it in the New Yorker, but Cheney's got wet ops all over the world under the Joint Special Operations Command shooting people in the back of the head. People were, oh, my goodness, that's illegal, and we should have known about that, and somebody call a Senate committee. But they can fly a remote control plane around killing people with Hellfire missiles, and it's just no big deal at all somehow.
There's definitely been a paradigm shift since 9/11 in how targeted killings viewed. I mean, clearly it was a very, something that was just not really considered a plausible option, pre 9/11, and now it's become, very, very normalized policy.
Well, I mean, even that Seymour Hersh revelation was late in the Bush years that he talked about. You know, special ops killing people, doing targeted assassinations here, hither and yon, and, in Africa and South America and in the Middle East and who knows where outside of the war zone.
And there was at one point during the Bush administration, there was, it was revealed that there had been a targeted killing program, designed in the early years of the Bush administration. And there was quite a bit of outrage when that came out.
Yeah. All right. Now, so Let's see, you do point out in here that the first drone strike in the covert war was in Yemen, and that was one that actually killed an American citizen, except they said that's not who they were targeting at the time, and so that pretty much was the end of the controversy at the time, right? And then all his friends were rounded up and called the Lackawanna Six and all of that, right?
Yeah, that did not, that, you know, at the time, that didn't get a huge amount of attention. It's really only, and many people actually forget about that. The common figure you see cited is that there have been three American citizens killed. Anwar al-Awlaki obviously is the most famous one, and he's the only one that was really acknowledged as a target. The other two usually mentioned are his son and Samer Khan, who was with him, who was killed in the same strike as al-Awlaki. And, you know, usually those are the American citizens you hear referred to. But yes, there was, you know, as early as 2002, another instance, and those are the four U.S. citizens we know of that have been killed by drone strikes.
Now, what else can you tell us about the drone war in Yemen?
So that has ramped up, you know, considerably recently. The drone war in Yemen targets al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which is a Yemen-based al-Qaeda affiliate. It was tied to the attempted Christmas Day, you know, so-called underwear bombing in 2009. Mm-hmm. And it was after that incident, after the attempted bombing, that the U.S. really turned its attention to Yemen.
Now, is that mostly the CIA or the Joint Special Operations Command? I think I remember about a year ago the Washington Post said that they were fighting over it.
Well, originally it had been principally the military that was running the drone strikes there. The CIA expanded its operations there in 2011 to include drone strikes. I think there's some debate about, what some of the early strikes in Yemen over whether, you know, under whose control they were. And, of course, these are always based on anonymous claims. So it's very hard to get absolute confirmation on whether a particular strike was carried out by the CIA or by military or by some combination operation, because it's obviously the administration never confirms any details about that. But from what we know from off-the-record sourcing, et cetera, it was originally principally the military that was operating there until 2011, and that's when the CIA really ramped up its strikes in Yemen.
Mm-hmm. And then do you have much of an estimate of how many people have been killed?
The most estimates, you know, if you take the average of the couple of organizations that are tracking these, peg it just around 3,000. And, you know, there are a number of places that have tracked these sort of one by one as they're reported. The Long War Journal does so, the New America Foundation, the London Bureau of Investigative Journalism, Washington Post now has started a sort of blow-by-blow tracking mechanism. But again, these are generally just, it's what's reported. And I think that the number of strikes is fairly consistently reported, but the casualties, there's a lot of controversy over how those casualties are counted, not just even the number killed, but also the number of those that are militants versus civilians, because of the covert nature of the drone strikes. So we never get any confirmation from the government. And also because, of where these drones are taking places, there's very few journalists on the ground, very few rights organizations on the ground, almost no one to sort of that's there when the actual things happen, or even speaking, you know, having access to victims after the fact.
Now, when you do have some information come through, like, you know, when the Bureau for Investigative Journalism went and did all that work in Pakistan, for example, that kind of thing, does it seem that, wow, there's really a lot more than we already knew about? Or is it pretty much, yeah, that's right along with our estimates, that sort of thing?
There's been a lot of discussion about the range and the estimates.
Because like you say, so much is buried under secrecy, but I wonder how buried is it? Or do we pretty much have a good view of the quantity, at least, of drone strikes going on? You know what I mean?
Well, I think we have a good view of the quantity of strikes and in terms of the overall casualties. You know, the numbers, you know, there's a lot of debate about how many civilians have been killed in particular. And a lot of people parsing the difference between, say, the New America Foundation's numbers and the Bureau of Investigative Journalism numbers. Mm-hmm. But if you really think about it, they're all putting it in the, you know, several hundred range. the Bureau of Investigative Journalism, I think, now has a high-end range of just over 1,000. But they're still all in the multiples of hundreds. And that's all of the consistent thing is that all of those counts are much higher than the numbers that the administration has acknowledged publicly.
And then, now, what can you tell us about the strikes in Somalia? Because this is a war that really has been fought by American proxies since 2006, mostly the Ethiopians, I guess. But then from time to time, we hear a little bit about, sometimes it was even a nuclear submarine shot some cruise missiles and killed some women and children and missed the guy they were going for. But we only hear every once in a while about American involvement, you know, direct involvement in Somalia, at least since the end of 2006 there.
Yeah, it definitely does not seem to be the same level of, you know, the same scope of campaign as we are running in Pakistan or in Yemen. The strikes in Somalia have been rare. That said, in both in public speeches and off the record, you know, there's been a lot more discussion of al-Shabaab, a lot more, you know, a lot more frequent tying of al-Shabaab to al-Qaeda, because that's one of the main debates in Somalia is how closely is al-Shabaab affiliated with al-Qaeda and how much are their goals regional or local, and, you know, how much are they tied to any kind of international plots? And that, you know, is definitely something you can see both in public comments and in off-the-record comments from administration officials, you know, that they're aware that this appears like a very tenuous, sometimes a group, you know, like al-Shabaab in Somalia appears to have just a tenuous connection to like a threat to the homeland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, only really a tie if you're trying to make one. Well, I heard some of them got on a boat and went to Yemen one time where they must have done some jumping jacks with another guy whose name we don't know but we're looking at. And so, look, they're all friends of Zawahiri. I mean, I've never heard anything closer than, you know, of any association closer than that of al-Shabaab. Have you, other than just rumor and innuendo?
Well, I think that there's, you know, it depends on the analysis. I think there's certainly, you know, cases. There's certainly many like avowed links. The question is about, you know, how much direct evidence there are of threats, and that brings us to like another point in, you know, that we tried to lay out in the piece, which is that while, you know, there's been a lot of public discussion of, in sort of broad terms, the administration justifying the war in these farther off places, they've actually acknowledged now that they are conducting what they call direct action in Somalia and Yemen. You know, they will never discuss particular cases or particular strikes. So we don't get to know, you know, what the evidence was to target a particular person.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, you know, all morality aside or whatever, I can see how it would make sense for the CIA to say, man, we've got this list of guys in Pakistan we want to blow up, and let's check them off the list and blow them all up and that kind of thing. But even from their tactical or strategic or whichever sort of point of view there, they're still facing the law of diminishing returns here, right? Like, it can be a problem to get too addicted to drone use when at some point, even as Stanley McChrystal is saying now, you might be creating more enemies than you're killing here, and it may be time to change to another tactic at least.
Well, there's definitely been a drawback since its peak in 2010. Particularly in the campaign in Pakistan, and I think that certainly reflects the complicated, you know, diplomacy situation there. And as you said, the concern that the CIA, there was a lot of discussion in the press, particularly in 2010, 2011, you know, that the CIA was overly targeting so-called foot soldiers as opposed to high-level targets. And again, this idea, as is constantly repeated publicly, that we're going after sort of high-level individuals, when there have been thousands of drone strikes, you know, there's a bit of a disconnect there between those two facts. And so I think you definitely could see that in the around 2010, 2011, and in the scaling back of the drone campaign in Pakistan. Again, partly because of civilian blowback. Also, you know, you had people like Cameron Mutter from the State Department, publicly questioning, you know, the how effective it was. Now you have someone like McChrystal coming out. So there's definitely, you can see that there's debate about it. But at the same time, there have been, you know, there were, I think, 8 drone strikes in the first 10 days of, 7 in the first 10 days, and then a few more since then of 2013 in Pakistan. So it's not ending.
Mm. Now, you mentioned in your article about this guy Johnson from, he's the State Department's legal counsel, used to work
he's
at the Pentagon.
He's actually the Pentagon's general counsel, yeah.
Uh-huh. And now, I guess he gave this speech that, am I right, it was sort of a trial balloon for, hey, what if we kind of turn the terror war back into a police mission instead of a foreign policy thing? How well was that taken? Well, am I right that it was a trial balloon? And second, did everybody just dismiss that? Or did people say, hey, yeah, maybe we should listen to him?
You know, I don't know if it was a trial balloon. It was definitely, you know, an interesting speech. And there's been a number of stories since then sort of, giving a similar sort of vein. Washington Post ran a series of stories this fall talking about two administration officials who were sort of giving some indication that they're aware that this is that they've got to sort of start articulating an end in sight. However, as I mentioned in the article, he didn't give a date for, in his speech, how will it end? I mean, there's sort of some acknowledgement that, probably the scale of the kind of things we're doing. But on the other hand, drones, because of drone warfare is, has these relative military advantages of being, not causing U.S. casualties and being, as they say, more precise because of the ability to hover over targets, et cetera. It's a very appealing, technology. But I do think that, at least from what has been said publicly, that there's some acknowledgement from the administration that they have to sort of articulate the limitations of it.
Mm. All right. Well, listen, I really appreciate your work here and your time on the show today. It's been great.
Great. Thank you so much.
Everybody, that's Cora Currier. She is a fellow at ProPublica. That's ProPublica.org. And the piece is called Everything We Know So Far About Drone Strikes. And I promise that is no hyperbole. There's 50 links here to all of the best sources of all the most important everything you need to know about America's drone war, for real. Maybe 100 links. Real good stuff, including experts to follow on Twitter at the bottom and everything else. Everything We Know So Far About Drone Strikes by Cora Currier at ProPublica.org. The Emergency Committee for Israel, Brookings, Heritage, AIPAC, WINEP, GINSA, PNAC, CNAS, the AEI, FPI, CFR, and CSP. It sure does seem sometimes like the war party's got the foreign policy debate in D.C. all locked up. But not quite. Check out the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. They put America first, opposing our government's world empire, and especially their Middle Eastern madness. That's the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. Hey ladies, Scott Horton here. If you would like truly youthful, healthy, and healthy-looking skin, there is one very special company you need to visit. Dagny & Lane at dagnyandlane.com. Dagny & Lane has revolutionized the industry with a full line of products made from organic and all-natural ingredients that penetrate deeply with nutrient-rich ionic minerals and antioxidants for healthy and beautiful skin. That's Dagny & Lane at dagnyandlane.com. And for a limited time, add promo code SCOTT15 at checkout for a 15% discount. Hey everybody, Scott Horton here, inviting you to check out the Future Freedom Foundation at FFF.org. They've got a brand new website with new and improved access to more than 20 years worth of essays promoting the cause of liberty. And FFF's writers, including Jacob Hornberger, Jim Bovard, Sheldon Richman, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and more, aren't just good. They're the best at opposing and discrediting our corrupt overlords in Washington and their warfare, welfare, regulatory police state. That's the Future Freedom Foundation's new and improved site at FFF.org. Man, you need some Liberty stickers for the back of your truck. At LibertyStickers.com, they've got great state hate, like Pearl Harbor was an inside job. The Democrats want your guns. U.S. Army, die for Israel. Police brutality, not just for black people anymore. And government school, why you and your kids are so stupid. Check out these and 1,000 other great ones at LibertyStickers.com. And of course, they'll take care of all your custom printing for your band or your business at TheBumperSticker.com. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, y'all, Scott here. First of all, thanks to the show's sponsors and donors who make it possible for me to do this. Secondly, I need more sponsors and more donors if the show is to continue. ScottHorton.org/donate has all the links to use PayPal, Give.org, Google Wallet, WePay.com, and even Bitcoins to make a donation in any amount. You can also sign up for monthly donations of small and medium-sized amounts through PayPal and Give.org. Again, that's ScottHorton.org/donate for all the links. To advertise on the site or the show, email me, Scott@ScottHorton.org. And thanks.